Hello, everybody. We are just a couple days away from the season 7 premiere.
Hannah and I are on a pre-Game of Thrones group podcasting trip preparing for the new season, and we thought it would be the perfect time for some last-minute homework on the series.
In case you didn't know, iBooks has an exclusive version of George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones called the Enhanced Editions that help you keep track of the storylines and the characters in a fun and interactive way.
So we're going to be talking about that in addition to everything else today. But these enhanced editions are legitimately the coolest interactive reading experience I've ever had.
We've just spent the last 15 minutes on the journeys portion where you can pick a character and see where they've been in that book.
Victarion Greyjoy, Stepstone, Atlantis. It's really cool. We're going to talk about this more, but we wanted to start the episode and tell you guys about it. And get on with the show.
These books are available exclusively on iBooks, and you can go to apple.co/Game of Thrones to check them out.
They're not available in all countries, but they're probably available where you live.
That's apple.co/Game of Thrones.
We're obsessed, and we know you will be too.
So a woman who has not spent a single day of her adult life in Westeros becomes the ruler of Westeros? That's justice?
There is only one god.
Dragons haven't won a war in 300 years. Armies win them all the time.
You've made thousands of enemies all across the world.
You're the mother of dragons.
Lord Snow here grew up in a castle.
She's little more than a
child. Looks like the bastard's in love.
Fuck the king.
Targaryen.
Things I do for love.
No, no, no. You'll hang for this.
Why should anyone
That's
trust
why I read so much Jon Snow.
You must be this.
The true enemy won't wait out the storm.
You have no one at your side who understands the land you're on.
Knowledge.
It brings the power.
Real quick. When you say unite or reunite, is it just like come together on a screen to interact or like form an alliance and make plans together?
Either or, yeah.
Yeah,
whatever you want.
I like how you have pen and paper out and you're answering these questions so honestly. Taking it very seriously.
I've got my document with my notes.
We appreciate it.
Everyone that's listening, hi, how are you? This is Game of Thrones. Thank you for listening. The new season of Game of Thrones is
days away.
In a few days.
Hours away.
And to prepare for season 7, what better way than for us to come crash at Casa de History of Westeros?
Directly after Con of Thrones.
Well, that's Castle de History.
Oh, yeah,
this
sorry.
Is truly a castle. Thank you so much for having us, guys.
Hey, thanks for coming. It's been great.
It's been so much fun.
Yeah.
Just want to say quick shout out at the very beginning of the episode to the jam sessions that have been going down in this house. It's like we are reading each other's souls, particularly
apple,
Sean.
Pear, grape, all the jams.
Cherry. Con of Thrones was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was so much fun that we all went home for one day and decided to keep going.
Are you guys excited for the new season? I know we haven't talked about a lot.
There's a new season?
I feel like that's all we've talked about since
that's
we got
true.
Here.
Yeah.
I think he's talking about fall.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited
Summer
about fall. It's pretty muggy here. Yeah.
We're in a castle that's surrounded by trees, and for the most part, we've been doing pre-season 7 that, I don't know, I can't speak for you guys outside of conversations, so like on recording, but for me, it's something I know that I needed, and I wasn't really sure that I didn't, you know, think about it, but it's been really good. I'm really excited.
Yeah.
I think that my favorite moment of all of us hanging out together so far was when the George R. R. Martin news dropped. And we were all sitting around the computer constantly refreshing Not a Blog over and over again for hours.
Still waiting today.
But it was like, it was one of those things where it's like, we're doing other stuff and hanging out. And every once in a while, someone would be like, hey, did you refresh lately?
But every once in a while, every 2 minutes.
Yeah,
maybe.
Like 10 minutes or so. Yeah, still no real concrete answers. But for those of you who haven't been over to Not a Blog recently or not checked Twitter or anywhere on the internet, George R. R. Martin posted a can you even call it a riddle? We don't even really know what it is or what it means, but all we know that is about Valyria.
And it implied that there was going to be an update in 1 hour.
Yes, it has been approximately 24 hours or something like that
I mean, it's kind of on brand, though.
Yeah, it's very
hard. Apparently, it's a Bible verse that he just changed one word to Valyria, the location to Valyria. But still, it doesn't necessarily help us figure anything out.
Right, so we spent some time speculating what that could and couldn't mean.
What did you guys think last night when it came out?
It was confusing because of the tag. That was the first one of the first things we tried to look at, and how he tagged it. Because he usually tags TV stuff with the HBO and or Game of Thrones tag. And this one was tagged Song of Ice and Fire. And he rarely uses the Song of Ice and Fire tags, as we discovered by looking at how often he used them. And so that just made it more confusing because it seemed to be, you know, if it was a TV thing, that would be like, okay, well, the premiere was last night. Mm-hmm. So for LA or whatever. So it could have had something to do with that. Maybe there's a Doom flashback or Valyria flashback. That didn't seem very likely, but it was certainly possible. But now that, you know, it seems less likely now.
Yeah, I agree. We've seen lots of speculation about, and even some in the comments. So we'll get to this in a little bit. But on Watchers, we asked everybody a couple questions about the upcoming season. And one of them was, what's going to happen in episode 1? And there were some people who were trying to fit into how Valyria could fit into episode 1 of season 7. And I mean, it's okay, a little please. Bit of a, I mean, I think it's a little bit of a stretch, but that's one of the pieces of speculation.
Yeah, maybe it was meant for people attending the premiere. Maybe it's just the timing of it.
He
was
wasn't
right
at the premiere himself.
But, right, but he still might want those people to know, hey, here's a little clue what's coming.
True, yeah.
In a very, very masked way.
A very public.
Again, the tagging is what throws that off. Though, right? Like, he didn't tag Game of Thrones. He tagged Song of Ice and Fire. It's really odd. But the title Dragonstone of the first episode, you know, that's...
That
could relate, because that is where the Targaryens fled.
And the art here in this post is It reminds me of the spires of Dragonstone as well.
Yeah. But it's weird because he also has a Greyjoy sigil attached to the post.
Yeah. And that's from the World of Ice and Fire.
Okay. Now, we haven't mentioned that George also marked the emotion on his post. It says current mood, enigmatic.
Yeah. And we disabled comments.
Yep.
Why?
Can we read? Let's read what the post says.
All right.
You're just giving him what he wants, all this attention.
I know.
We're feeding into the problem.
I have to say thanks to George, because we were hanging out last night, a couple days before season 7, a couple days after Con of Thrones, with each other, having a great time. And then this drops.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was about the most sincere thing that could have happened. And it's really funny, because since he didn't go to the premiere, like you said, and the location is marked to Santa Fe, this is just a wonderful show of power. Just the Greyjoy emblem, the concept art of Valyria, and this quote that reads, "Alas, alas, that great city, Valyria, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come."
Posted at 5:08 p.m. yesterday.
I think the Bible verse is, it was Bethlehem or something like that instead of Valyria. I forget, but it still doesn't help.
So a prince is born.
Maybe the Greyjoy sigil means he was raiding the premiere with that news. He's like, I'm going to distract take some of the steam away from the premiere with a raid.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because I mean, everything's been dominated with information coming out of the season 7 premiere, or the red carpet premiere, with a bunch of the interviews that have been happening on the red carpet and photos that we've got of the first episode in the last couple of days, and more details about what each episode is called. And so in the midst of all that.
Hey, that carpet was blue.
It was blue.
Very blue. The blue carpet.
Whoa.
And Joanna, our friend Joanna Robinson from A Storm of Spoilers and A Cast of Kings, took pictures of what looked like just really tall people in costumes on stilts.
Mm-hmm.
And then she followed up and was like, by the way, I can't say this for certain, but I'm pretty sure that these were supposed to be ice dragons walking around the premiere.
Oh. Which is wild.
So that's a bit more suggestive than a trailer, but
I was impressed by that huge Westeros map that they had just covering the
dance
floor.
The dance floor.
I want that
the
in my
dance.
I was really disappointed that I didn't think of that for Con of Thrones.
Well, I think that you guys do need it in your house, because you've got a million maps of Westeros
eventually,
everywhere. It's
eventually
the next
all the walls,
piece.
The ceiling, the carpet, everything will be maps.
Every inch. Well, I guess they wonder if the floor was kind of like the shots of Cersei having her own.
Yeah,
exactly.
The painted floor.
Meant to be like that.
Not the painted table.
That's pretty cool.
Well, there's our photos. We're looking at photos right now from the first episode before we get to these questions, because, I mean, they're from the first episode, so this is pretty cool. I feel like there's been so much overshadowed by, like you said, the all the interviews and the news from the red carpet premiere and then George and this Valeria post. And it was like, oh, by the way, here's confirmation that Mira goes to the wall.
And that they make it through.
In the first episode.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Yeah.
Dolores Ed. Like, see him back.
A lot of people think that he dies.
Yeah.
We saw a lot of those answers. And the fire looks about as good as it ever has. The beards also look about as burly as they ever have. And Brienne is training Podrick for what looks like to be a serious fight. Mm-hmm. And excellent. The artist's rendition of the painted floor. Cersei looking mildly concerned about the progress on the floor. And our hero shot of Lyanna Mormont, which mm-hmm. I think that HBO knows that we deserve.
I feel like it's the same shot we've seen 100 times from 100 different angles, but it's still exciting. And so I think that like the biggest confirmation that we get out of these new photos from the first episode is that Mira and Bran make it through the wall. Because if you look, we've seen in the trailer, we see them approaching and there's not really much in their way, but here we see them, or we see Mira and can assume that Bran is with her.
I don't know. She looks pretty upset about something. She's like, oh, I forgot.
No,
something.
She looks happy that she doesn't have to pull that guy anymore.
No, she sees the wheelchair for the first time.
It also opens up not just that they definitively get through, but that it happens in the first episode. Because mm-hmm. it's the type of thing that could have been slow roll till the end. Mm-hmm. And that makes you reevaluate when or if he'll meet Sansa or Jon or whoever else, mm-hmm. but knowing it happened in the season in episode one makes certain other thoughts more clear.
Yeah. And that's been interesting. So as we were scrolling through comments on Watchers, and as we've been reading a lot of these interviews that happened last night on the blue carpet, a lot of people have been talking about the pacing of this season. And we've been speculating and spending a lot of time on the season's shorter and we don't have as many episodes and blah, blah, blah. But we get so much affirmation of, this thing is going to be fast paced. It's going to be filled with a lot of action. Anything can happen. And so I think that we cannot necessarily play by the same rules of what a typical episode one might be. And we can get into this a little bit later in the episode when we talk about some other speculation and theory that we got from comments and watchers. But there's a couple thoughts and ideas that like we could see some major, major things happening in episode one because the pace is going to be quicker and we've got more ground to cover. And you think about where we are right now versus where we need to be by the end of the next couple episodes that people are saying things like a Euron battle or Littlefinger dying or all these types of things could all happen in episode one. And I think some of those things, you know, may be a stretch, but I think that seeing Bran and Mira make it to the wall, that's a big thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's one of the first couple moments that we kick off season one with.
Yeah, I saw speculation that the water battle from the trailer was near the opening of the first episode, just like
I've been reading too. And I think that that's like, we've also heard from people who were at the premiere and just from around that the opening of the first episode is pretty incredible and pretty unbelievable. And so having something like that would be like a battle in episode one, you know, we'll see, but that's setting a tone for the next handful of episodes.
I'm hoping an opening sequence that is like what happened after the Red Wedding, the opening of season four in Two Swords, except we're going to go to Valyria and we'll see them shaping Valyrian steel.
In the caverns underneath. If we go to Valyria in episode one.
I mean, that would be, that's what we want, but.
It might be a clear signal of where the spinoff's going.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be really cool. So I guess I wanted to ask you guys, leading up into the other seasons, I think felt different than this season. I want to know if it's the same. For me, I feel like season seven, we're all expecting it to be what she said, which is something that has a pacing. At least that's what they've been saying in the quotes and the interviews that they design a message for, you know, through. It seems like the designed message is that they're not just saying that there's big moments. They're also talking about the kind of way the moments happen and the fact that it's just kind of cascading the whole time. So I guess what I'm asking is, does it feel different to you actually, or do you think it's mostly just press and it might just be the same show as normal?
I mean, I think that it has to be different. We had a longer wait for one, so that ramps up the excitement even more, and we're waiting for fewer episodes. And so you just know that things have to be different. And so I think it just, is for sure different.
What do you think it's going to be like? Do you think it's going to be the way they say, where we just open up in the first episode and there's maybe a sea fight?
Yeah, I think it's going to definitely move quickly. I think it's going to be within the first, you know, couple episodes that some big characters are reunited with each other, that Danny and John are going to meet. I don't think it's going to happen later or in the second half. I think it'll be the first half.
Mm-hmm. Like when John got brought back to life.
I was just going to say, we spent so much time last season. There's no way John's coming back to life the first half of the season. Like, that's like, too early, blah, blah, blah. And then, well.
Yeah. Thank you, my God.
I think that another important factor is that so many of the characters are all together now. They used to have all these different characters in all these different locations, and now it's really kind of come together. So they get to focus on, they get to have scenes that pack a punch with regards to covering a lot of characters at once, whereas before they had to split that time up. So they get to focus on it. I like this idea of a battle kicking it off, because you're right, there are some rumors about it being in kind of a spectacular opening. And battle, of course, makes a pretty likely call there for a spectacular opening. And if you think about it, like, there's not a lot of options for where else a battle could take place.
On the sea,
the last we saw Danny was on the sea with all of her people.
Uh-huh. I was thinking that the second episode would be a good fit for a sea battle because it's named Stormborn.
Yeah.
Because that can imply Euron as much as it can imply Danny.
That's true.
One of the questions I'm curious about, what you guys think, is Danny, like you said, we last saw Danny. She was on the ocean sailing
many
to Westeros. Yeah.
With many new friends.
But do we think that she could make it to Dragonstone without running into any sort of issue? You know, I don't know. I think that that's a question that I really hadn't thought about until the last couple of days. I just had made this assumption that she was just going to sail on through and land. And she very well could do that, because I think the Dragonstone is just a stepping stone in what she's ultimately going to do in this season. But that could, again, be another potential place for conflict early on, is her arriving and not being able to do so smoothly.
Right.
This is, in my mind, this is where I am seeing it go. She gets the Dragonstone without incident. Her and her fleet and her army, they all get there. And then, right here, let's go invade
the next place.
Castle Rock. Not Castle Rock, sorry.
King's Landing.
King's Landing.
Right.
And they get ambushed by Euron's fleet.
Oh.
Okay.
And so then she'll be there with the dragons and her army, but her fleet destroyed. And so it kind of, now what do? Now they have to figure out a commando raid to get into King's Landing. Or maybe they don't try King's Landing head on and go around to Castle Rock or something else. But I think it gives us a battle up front. It makes Euron important. It gives us interaction between him and Cersei. And also keeps Dany from just slicing through butter like a hot knife. She's now has this challenge again of how to move her army around. So.
He said, slicing. Oh, never mind. It sounded very funny, though.
I like a hot knife. Same thing for a second.
Yeah.
slicing
right through a hot knife.
Exactly. It sounded like you were using butter to slice.
So you think that Danny's going to get early political intrigue, not only. Like, it won't just be gratuitous. Yeah.
I think getting there will be easy. Like, I don't think it'll be a battle to get the Dragonstone, but I think it'll be a battle to leave Dragonstone.
Mm-hmm.
And Melisandre's going to be there.
I agree that Euron has to be strong, or else it's kind of pointless to have him much at all. Right. He has to do some damage. Trailers kind of make it look like he's going to. Mm-hmm.
But, so if he does damage in the opening.
Yeah. Episode, even if it's quote unquote suicide, right? Even if it's he recognizes his fleet's going to be destroyed in this battle, but it's worth it. Those dragons might come and burn us all up, but not before we take down Dany's fleet. And that you know, does that make sense? That I think that'll
an ambush makes sense that way too. Because if it's not an ambush, then she would maybe explain why the dragons aren't around. She wasn't prepared for that. Or wasn't expecting anything like that.
They come in after the fact or whatever.
Yeah, because she doesn't want to bring the dragons to King's Landing. Worried about destruction or accidental collateral damage.
I'm definitely not a sea battle expert, but that might even be part of their plan. Is like the dragons set our ships on fire, ramming speed towards their ships. You know, burn theirs down too. You know,
because the dragons were really effective in marine, right?
Yeah, like
they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they roasted those ships quite well. But they were also parked. They were pulled into a bay. It would have been difficult to flip around and catch the wind. So I'm not sure what they would be like in the open sea. But it looks like it's going to happen at night, so that's going to be pretty cool to look at.
It's going to be very cool.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that. It is at night, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, we never introduced you guys.
Oh, are you serious?
I mean, who are we?
If you're listening to the podcast, you've probably heard us talk about History of Westeros at some point, or you've probably seen us share their stuff on social media if you follow our social media. And if you listen to their podcast, when we got here, we snuck on to... Well, Did we sneak? We planned.
We very deliberately took over the first 3 minutes of it.
We did.
They beat us up, tied us into a closet, and took our clothes.
But we got you drinks while you were recording.
They didn't do it to Sean for some reason.
Well, I felt like, I don't know, for some reason Sean was on our team.
I might have been an accomplice.
He provided the rope.
But Aziz actually did the most panels at Con of Thrones this year.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh,
and Shea and Sean, by the way.
They did twice as many as I did.
And you also duoed the Defending Dorm panel with Emmett.
Yeah, I did a panel on the main stage, which was very exciting and nerve-wracking, but went very...
You guys did awesome.
But went very well.
And he still is the Storm, and he's not with us, but he's here with in spirit. And Sean, this was your first time doing stuff like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And what was that like?
It was... awesome in every way. Everything about the con was awesome in every way. The panels were certainly like the meat and potatoes of it. And I first felt a little unprepared because there's so many other expert people on these panels. And I wanted to make sure I was up to snuff. But, you know, I couldn't possibly have talked about all the stuff I had researched because there's all these other experts that had their insights. And then the people in the audience, they were fully as at least 100 people on each panel, like in the audience of each panel. And they were all like engaged and ready to go with questions, with good questions. And some funny comments and a lot, you know, I've told a couple of my friends about the whole thing. I felt like it was going to Game of Thrones College.
Right.
Yeah. It's like all day long, we went to these like classes.
Uh-huh.
And then after the classes, we all partied. And then the next day, we went back to Game of Thrones classes. And that when it was over, we went to party.
Some of the students are teachers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And also students at the same time.
Can we talk about my favorite moment at Con of Thrones that we all had together? Was the night before everything started, we were all hanging out and we went into the main stage, the Great Hall, whatever we called it. What was it called?
The Great Hall.
The Great Hall.
Because the sky's sailing.
And as they were kind of setting everything up for the weekend, we decided to check it out and kind of get a lay of the land.
Scope
so
things out.
We went into the room as they were setting up the main hall where everything happened, and we went up onto the stage and kind of just walked around and took it all in for a moment. And it was this really special thing that we all got to share together because we spend a lot of time doing this podcast thing, and to have the opportunity to be there in person and to kind of take in what we were about to enjoy and do. It was such a special moment to be up there.
That room was huge.
That room was so massive. And that stage felt insanely huge for our, you know, we all work really hard and we're all really proud of what we do, but that stage felt so big for our small contributions to the internet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it was a neat moment for all of us to get to do that together before Game of Thrones College got too wild.
I wish the rest of our podcasting compatriots would have been able to come as early as we all did. We had the luxury for the most part to be able to drive. You guys came up from Atlanta. I was nearby in the Midwest, and Hannah came in early because why the hell not?
Because
she's cool. That really was, that was so special. Do you guys remember standing there and taking pictures? And
Hannah got a crazy shot of us all perfectly in line, like a band photo.
You know, I'll have to post that. We took a picture of all of us looking like Backstreet Boys walking out.
No, I'm just podcasting about a story.
Yeah.
I wish we could be doing this right now with all of the friends that we made this weekend at Con of Thrones. And, there's really not much I feel like I've been talking about it ever since it happened, you know, especially with you guys, but not on the podcast. It's just, it was a really beautiful collection of people, and everyone was so gracious and thoughtful with what their intentions were and so friendly to each other.
Yeah,
and
really special.
Really never seen a collection of people so excited to be around each other and to be friends. And like you said, to do the celebrations and the learning together, and for it to happen at the Nexus right before season 7 was extra special.
I know there's just hundreds and hundreds of people out there who's been on Cloud9 for the past week.
Yes.
Like between the con and
us included. Sure. Like, ready to go.
Yeah. No, I had a great time. But seriously, thank you guys so much for I know you put in so much research for the panels. And I've heard personally from attendees and from friends that were there, and I knew from walking in and seeing some of those panels, there was a hallway of 4 panel rooms, and some of the seating got up to 250 in some of those rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I was walking by 4 doorways, and there were people spilling out of each of the doorways, and creating another mass, connecting the rooms of people looking into the rooms and hearing stuff that couldn't fit or couldn't stand in there. And, you know, I would see you guys in those rooms, and You know, all the thoughtful work that you guys put in preparing for the convention is part of what is a big part of what made that meat and potatoes such an enjoyable experience. And there was just a wonderful crew of people that helped out with programming that were available to me for a long time, conversations ahead of it. And it just kind of blossomed into a beautiful thing. It was really cool being able to spend time with you guys and all those people with you guys as well, who were your friends or our friends. And then now everyone's just together. And it's cool because it's happening before season 7.
I mean, you had a stacked list of programming when you first read it to us, because we had a long phone call before the con, a while before the schedules were released. And I couldn't believe how much it kept going. I mean, it was even longer than what it eventually was, because you just couldn't quite fit it all in. But there were some deep cut subjects that were really exciting and intriguing. And I'm excited for everyone to be able to hear some of them.
So shout out to Ashea for the Nymeria pitch victory on our great debates panel hosted by the Storm Spoilers. Yay, yes.
Clapping. And hopefully you'll all be able to watch it online, my pitch.
You're getting it tonight, right?
I better be. I hope I am.
And hopefully they make it for real.
Yeah. For real. If everyone retweets it enough, then who knows? You might see it.
So gooey stuff out of the way on goo. I really would like to just tell you guys how I feel about you this whole episode. But I won't.
The feels episode.
I know. It's after Paula Fairfield kind of ruined the podcast for us. From now on, it's just going
to
be a
month. Yeah, if you guys haven't already had the opportunity to listen to our Paula Fairfield episode, it was one of those moments where we were on stage interviewing Paula and just like looking at each other like, how is this even real? Mm-hmm. Paula is unbelievable, brings so much passion to the story that we love. And so if you need any more assurance that this show and this story that we care so much about is in the hands of the right people, listening to somebody like that is going to give you more hope and faith in what's happening in these next two seasons than I think almost anything else.
Even if you don't like what they did with Dorne.
Even if you don't like what they did with Dorne.
Well, the sounds of Dorne weren't the problem.
Oh, they were great. So what are you guys planning for this season?
We release 2 episodes a week. And sometimes there's a little extra coverage as well there. But a book to show episode that Aziz and I do with Radio Westeros, another great podcast. And that just obviously covers all of the book to show comparisons, which are fewer and fewer, but still very relevant. And then we have another episode that we release on Monday. That's the first thing that we release. And that's with Sean here, our show-only review, which doesn't take any book spoilers into account.
And you guys do that live, right?
Yeah, we do.
So on camera, live, with illustrated maps in the background. And anything can happen, honestly.
And we're going to have stills from the episodes too, because the new broadcasting software that I use allows me to include screen caps, which will help enhance our coverage of the show.
Yeah, we're excited for that.
I will say that's one thing I made an effort to convey to fans of the con, how much work goes into whatever you're seeing or hearing. You know, lots of preparation, editing time, stuff like that. It's fun to just analyze and discuss, but there's a lot of work surrounding it all that I don't want to take away from the effort that people who are doing the research and willing to kind of put their faces out there and talk about stuff, you know, that maybe can be daunting. But the tedious editing work after the fact, that's what makes it all happen.
It's been really cool to be in the house with you guys and seeing you guys see how passionate you are and how focused you guys are at creating this thing and getting it up in time, and how much you take into account what the community is saying and the feedback, and how genuinely excited you guys are at the kind of feedback you get. It's just, it makes us feel a little less silly, among other things. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Well, it's rare, you know, everybody has some kind of connection to people that share their line of work. And we don't, obviously there's not a lot of people that do that, do this, just regular podcasting, let alone podcasting about Game of Thrones and Song of Ice and Fire. So it's rare to be around people that kind of know what you do day to day
and get it.
Yeah.
Should we try to convince every Game of Thrones podcast to move into the same house?
I thought you were going to say try to convince every Game of Thrones fan to become a podcaster.
I mean, I do. Well, I mean, I absolutely encourage that as well.
And then I'll move them all into the same house.
And then we'll move into the same house. Yeah.
I was going to say the amount of people I met at the convention that would introduce themselves first with their username because of Owns all over the years, and how many of those listeners of the show were there at the convention to create their own material mm-hmm. in relation to Game of Thrones. There was a lot of people that got inspired by other members of the community and started making. And a lot of those people were a big part of what made the convention a success, whether they were a part of programming or even just there to make the atmosphere brighter and more exciting. It was really heartfelt. And I think it says a lot more about the kind of fans that are willing to go to a convention and spread their arms and meet people in their community. Less so about, I think, the state of just creating stuff on the internet or the state of people creating stuff for Game of Thrones. I think it's just a heartwarming thing overall. And I think in general, don't we all just want to kind of contribute to something that we care about? And that's kind of what they're doing, mm-hmm. kind of what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I talked to a lot of people at the convention and I would give the same advice, is that people, as we go into this new season, there's so many opportunities for you to participate and for you to leave comments and to live tweet the show and to mm-hmm. create your own analysis and to send in your thoughts to all of our different shows. And I think that it's such a rewarding experience to participate. And so we encourage everybody to kind of, we can't do this and we can't theorize or figure out what's going to happen next without the whole community. And so don't be afraid to share your own thoughts and analysis and ideas and contribute to the conversation, because we all need each other.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of things we need from you, questions that we need answered, we have three questions for you all today. Everyone also listening and everyone who's been following on social media and on Watchers on the Wall. Three questions, because this off season, the longest off season that we've had, by the way, is now at an end.
Mm-hmm. Finally.
This weekend, which is so weird. So should we just go into it?
Yeah, how do we want to do this?
I think we should just ask them the first question.
Okay, so the first question that we got is, this question's a little cliche, but I do think that it lends itself to some interesting response. So the first question we asked is, who will die in season 7? So we asked for everybody's top three, what you think deaths were, and we can have a conversation about it, and then we will go to what some of the different comments and thoughts were from our posts on social media.
From Watchers on the Wall, it looks like a Stark sister is tied for least popular death conspiracy with Melisandre, Brienne, a dragon, Qyburn, the Wall, and Benjen all tied at one vote. And topping off the list, I don't know if it's a surprise to you guys, with 16 votes, Peter Baelish, aka Littlefinger.
Yeah, Littlefinger definitely got the most votes.
He's one of my picks. Yeah. I think he's done for.
I agree.
I don't. I'm maybe the dissenting voice. I don't think he's going to go.
I want to hear your opinions, because you were the only one here with... Shay has got notes on her phone, but you have the real thing right now. You have paper and pencil. And he's been writing as we've been recording, and it's been making me very... I was like, what is he writing about? So what do you have?
It's just a poem. I'm just writing a love tribute to you. No.
Can't wait to hear it.
So I'm predicting Cersei and Tormund. That's who I think is going to go down.
Tormund's on my list as well.
Yeah, and I don't want Tormund to die, but I just think he's in harm's way.
Why?
And I also think from a literary standpoint, it'd be like a tragic moment to happen. Cersei, I think, has too many enemies. She's just surrounded on every side, and a lot is lost if her character dies as far as interactions and plot and so forth. But at this point, there's this whole zombies in the north thing. She can die, and they still have enough trouble to deal with. So a third one, there's like 10 people I'm like 50-50 on, so mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
I think that most of the Sand Snakes are going to die. Mm-hmm. I think one maybe should or will stay alive, but I don't know which one I think will be the one to stay alive. But so two of them and then Littlefinger. Those are my answers.
Which two? Just...
That's what I'm saying. I don't know which one I think is... I want Nymeria to be the one to survive. Myself, that's what I want. No, I just like Jessica Henwick because she's in Star Wars and is awesome. Yeah. But I don't want the bad pussy, basically.
Yeah, I think Littlefinger, I think Yara, I think Tormund, and I think anyone who goes north of Jon, basically, I think is doomed.
Is written at risk. Yeah,
that's like a good measurement tool. Anyone north of Jon.
Yeah, I had Yara on my list as well, Tormund, and I think that Littlefinger's... I want to read one of the answers that we got on Watchers from Alba Stark, and I'm going to paraphrase because this was a lengthy paragraph, but a really good one, and they talk about how their number one pick is Littlefinger, and they say, I think the scene is set for the apprentice to best the master, but I don't think Sansa has to. The Hound is heading north with the Brotherhood Without Banners, and Sandor Clegane is one of the few people left alive who can tell Sansa what went down in the throne room when her father was arrested.
Oh, yeah.
And Alba Stark goes into all these other things that Sansa hasn't said about, that Sansa hasn't necessarily reacted to, like Littlefinger's involvement with Joffrey's death, or pushing Lysa out of the Moon Door, or any of those kinds of things. But once then concludes with, but Sansa won't stand by when she finds out he betrayed her father. While the Hound's truths have always been brutal, they have always been that truths. And so I think that that's a compelling argument for what is going to be the catalyst for Littlefinger finally getting out of the picture. We've seen Littlefinger all over all of the different trailers, and there's been a lot of talk and conversation about how he's going to be in Sansa's ear and the conflict that that's going to breed between Jon and Sansa and all of that. And so I think that Alba Stark sums it up pretty nicely in what might be the final catalyst to make that happen.
I feel like with even everything coming to a head, do you think that he'll get his justice now, or do you think it's going to be another one of those things that either George or David and Dan, you know, kind of stick till the end, that even if you're a bad person, if you're crafty, it can sometimes pay off?
I don't know.
Yeah, I do think on a certain level he deserves to die, and I wouldn't be like, oh my god, I can't believe Littlefinger died. I wouldn't be shocked, but I just don't expect it, partly because I think he's crafty. He's gone a long way with very little, and I don't think he's suddenly going to lose it all. He might be in dire straits now than he's been before, but so are many other characters. And he's also, again, from like a storytelling standpoint, he's a traveler. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He has interactions and ties with lots of other people in lots of other areas. And I think it's more likely for him to like go meet with Cersei.
Not stay in the North.
Than to die, yeah. But both could happen. We'll see.
I like the idea that the Hound is very believable in this. That's something I hadn't considered. The idea that he would be the one to give up this information has been out there for a little bit, and I think I agree with it. But the idea that Sansa respects his integrity as far as telling the truth, I hadn't thought about that too much. I think that's a strong point.
I think it's interesting that in all likelihood, Arya will be around that time period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she also has an opinion of the Hound and experience with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That'll be one of the big reunitings. Just it all depends on kind of what order it happens in.
Right.
Who do you think is going to die?
I think Littlefinger's going to die. I think that we were talking about his luck so far, and I just think that his luck is running out. And this could also be something that I'm not looking forward to, and something that I was annoyed with last season, is this whole Jon-Sansa conflict that I think is we're going to continue to have drawn out. And both of them have hinted quite a bit as to the fact that, and we see in these episode titles and descriptions that were released, that there is conflict in the North. And I think that some of that, especially early on, is going to be surrounding Sansa and Jon and her trying to get in his head, undermine him, talk over him, whatever. And then the conflict of him trying to listen or not listen to his sister. And I think that Littlefinger is going to heavily contribute to that. I think that that's kind of a no-brainer based off of him brooding in the corner looking at her the entire trailer. Also the end of season six. I'm not looking forward to that storyline. It is one that I don't super love. And so I think that me hoping that Littlefinger gets the boot in episode one
so that
I don't have to deal with this like Jon and Sansa conflict that is continuing to rise.
She won't say Jonsa.
I agree with Tormund being on the list because we see that he's north with Jon. I mean, I think that that's not necessarily a good place to be. And we don't, you know, there's speculation about what is happening in some of those promo photos, but it doesn't look good necessarily. And then Yara is also on my list. And a lot of votes came in for Yara and or Theon. I just feel like if the two of them meet Euron, and if there's a Greyjoy versus Greyjoy battle, which if there's a Greyjoy versus Greyjoy battle, I don't see them coming out of this conflict that's been built unscathed, you know? And I think that to me, having Theon die is just after he's gone, everything that he's gone through would be tragic to the point of like unnecessary. And so I think that Yara is a good candidate. And to have her die in a place, you know,
what does she say early on the season to Theon is don't die too far from the sea.
Yep.
And to have her die in battle on the sea, I just feel like it's a great ending to her character. And so I wouldn't be surprised if she's the one out of that battle that we see.
She's the one who gets scathed.
Yeah. What about you, Zach? You haven't given your...
I agree with what you said about Theon. I think that's a good point.
Thank you.
That's not really an answer to your question. I think that the Littlefinger stuff makes sense, but I'm not sure. I think that the anybody north of Jon thing makes sense, especially in the trailer with them being surrounded by the dead and the flaming sword. That, to me, kind of seemed like a send-off moment almost, but maybe it won't be. I'm not sure. It could be like 300 and Cersei's. Not the cat. I love the fact that the wall is mentioned so often.
Yes, we get a comment from somebody, and apologies for not writing down your name, but I laughed at your comment that the wall too is a character, and so we can't count that out. I mean, we've been talking for a long time about the wall is eventually going to have to come down, right? So right. If, whether or not it comes down in this season, I think is up for debate, but it's worth a point.
I just have a feeling. And I don't want you guys to agree with me. I really don't. But I have a feeling that this is it for Bronn.
Mm.
I'm feeling that this is the end.
Tell you, we thought that last season. We were sure that he was dead last season. I mean, it was just this cliche going off on one last adventure. I'm too old for this, you know. And then he didn't. So I don't know what I think about Bronn.
Do we think that Bronn's important enough in this season? I mean, not to like undermine or anything.
I can imagine him.
You know, I mean, I don't know.
Quasi dying. Like, I can imagine his soul is going to live on in a tree or in a wolf. You know what I mean? Like, beautiful. The actor won't still be there playing him, but he'll still exist as an entity. That's what.
Bronn?
Oh, you know what? I was thinking of Bran. Everyone makes that mistake. Sorry.
Also, it was beautiful, and I hope that he's
fine with Bronn becoming a tree.
All that might also happen for Bronn.
We can hope that Tyrion is the one around when Bronn is maybe captured or cornered in battle.
That's really sad. That's too beautiful.
Tyrion would maybe let him live. By the way, this is your episode 370.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With 371, actually.
371. Okay.
Wait, it might be 370
is our street address.
Oh, is it?
Hey.
It might be 370.
I think it is 370, but who knows?
Just delete an old episode. Don't let the facts get in a good way. Let the facts get in the way of a good story.
So I hope that Bronn doesn't die. Okay. Just clearly going to say that. Also, someone said Benjen. I think he sort of died.
Yeah, I was sort of. So
not all the way.
Somebody said Benjen, which I was confused
also
about.
The mountain. But
Beric's dead already, but he could still die.
That's true. Beric was on here quite a bit. Thoros was on here. There was a split between people voting for one of the Sand Snakes, which we talked about specifically, or all of the Sand Snakes. And so I think that there's a strong support for something happening with the Sand Snakes. And I think that once we get down to our specific episode discussion, we can talk about some of those things a little bit more in depth. But there's that. We've got... Who else is on this list? We've got Jorah, we've got Jaime, Dolores Ed, Grey Worm, Qyburn. And as we get to the end of the story, we go into every season with, well, we know that people are going to have to die because that's just the nature of the game. And the list is getting shorter. Who's it going to be? That cuts us to the core. So last season, it was everyone.
What if it's Brienne?
Yeah.
What if it's Brienne?
Oh, there's definitely a lot of characters that could die that would be devastated by that. That would cut
to the core if it was Brienne.
I'm definitely worried about Brienne. I think it's very likely that she's one of the ones who goes north.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Podrick also.
With Podrick.
Oh my gosh.
You think about it, if you try to count out who the 12 or 13 people going with Jon are, there could obviously be just some random people that we don't, whose names, you know, just random Night's Watch brothers.
First name Red, Redman. last name Shirt.
Yeah, Red Shirts, right. But yeah, Brienne, it's hard to imagine what else she's going to do, you know, especially if Arya turns up and then she doesn't have to go looking for Arya anymore.
Right.
I'm worried about her.
A dream team, though. I didn't even consider Brienne joining the squad up north. I just don't want to see her.
Tormund's going to die in her arms.
No.
Oh.
No. also kind of beautiful. He looks at her the way that he looked at her when he was eating that roll. And she looks at him the way he looked at her when he was eating that roll, finally. I don't want to see an undead Brienne, though. That would be a dangerous wife.
That's what I was about to say. That's how they would really twist the knife by not only killing them, but the having them come back.
Having them come back, and Jon has to kill Tormund later. You
know? I feel like we have to see that. Like, I feel like that has to happen. Like, somebody we care about is a white that somebody has to put down.
We got a teaser for Carsey from Hardhome, but yeah, I think it's definitely coming.
Yeah.
We're talking about people dying in each other's arms, and I want to read the funniest tweet of the week. So,
welcome to funniest tweet of the week.
Well, this one just like, so our friend Proma at Proma What Up tweeted, do you think Jon, Dany, and Tyrion will get drunk in season 7 and talk about how they have all held their dying lovers in their arms? And so we could add a Brienne and or Tormund to that list of holding each other as they pass.
Jon, Dany, and Tyrion have more to bond over. They can talk about how they all, you know, had their mothers die during childbirth.
Or how they're all going to, you know, ride
mothers
dragons
and lovers
or whatever.
Died and they're...
Everything they touch dies.
So I know we don't have a lot of time in this season, but if we could get like 5 minutes of just like, well, we almost got that last season of Tyrion trying real hard to get everybody to get drunk and talk about their feelings, but it didn't really work out so great.
Some of my favorite scenes.
The honesty game.
Yeah.
I heard that game was getting played, not to cut back to it, but I heard that the honesty game from season 2 was getting played at Con of Thrones.
Huh. Was it really?
Yeah, I heard
it was, but it got turned into spin the bottle.
What?
I literally, there was so many people. There must have been at least 20, maybe 30 people in the circle. And it got to where it was just too, people couldn't hear on the other sides or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone just started kissing.
Yeah.
That's the real honesty game. That's what people were just wanting to do. Yeah.
And we were trying to find, the thing is that people had to like pick another person, ask a question, but there were so many people, people didn't know each other, and they were tending to pick the person next to them, but then people 20 around on the other side couldn't hear what was happening. And so to randomly decide someone, I like... threw something or pin or something, wherever the pin points. And when I did that, this girl who was drunk because she had this empty bottle of wine, took the empty bottle of wine and put it on the ground to spin, meaning to randomly pick someone. But as soon as it happens, I spin a bottle, and those two people kiss.
That's how spin the bottle was
invented. And it just,
it was a bottle of Game of Thrones wine.
Kiss, Sean?
I probably kissed 6 or 7 different people. A couple people I kissed like 2 or 3 times.
You guys, this is not a squad cast. Yeah.
All right, so who will reunite in season 7?
I think I'm most excited for just Arya and everyone. Like, there's so many characters that Arya's gonna, like, I mean, Sansa, Jon, Bran, but also, like, but also potentially Gendry, the Hound. Mm-hmm. Like, those are exciting meetups.
Yeah, just the fact that we can talk about Arya being reunited with anybody, so much of last season and this season are these characters, well, let me back up. So much of Game of Thrones is all of our characters for so long have been isolated in their own storylines and have not really been interacting with each other. A lot of these big main characters that we look at, you know, Dany and Jon and all the Stark kids and
Bronn,
you know, all these people are very much working in their own separate worlds. And we're getting to this point, and it almost feels like fan fiction, honestly, that
we're
thinking a lot about who Arya is going to spend her time with and who Jon is going to spend his time with and who Dany is going to spend her time with. And I think that it's cool to finally see all of these storylines converge into a bigger...
It's like the story is here.
It's almost
like Robert's Rebellion, you know, leading up to what ended up happening with the War of the Five Kings. You know what I mean? It's like all just layers of patterns that encapsulates the moment. And it's like we've been, our Robert's Rebellion was when they left Winterfell, I guess, if we're talking about the Starks, particularly Dany was already out east, etc. But now we've just got, like you said, everyone's coming in. So that's why I thought this question would be fun. And we asked it last year as well. And I was looking at the differences between the answers from that episode last year to this episode. We've got like Jon, like if we're looking at the list of people here.
But what do you guys think?
What do you guys think? I know we've got a short amount of time. You guys got stuff to do tonight. We're still going to be talking. We plan on talking to them for about 15 minutes at the top of the episode.
It's been an hour.
And it's turned into
You know what we plan on doing tonight?
Yeah.
Talking about reunions coming up in season 7.
There is a lot of, it seems like that's going to be one of the main themes of this season in general, besides big battles. I think reunitings?
Yeah.
Reunions will be a huge part of it. And I'm looking forward to some of the ones that are kind of unpredictable. I think some of the, like Sansa and Arya, I don't know if it's unpredictable so much as it'll be, if it happens, I think it will, it'll be, you know, nice. Mm-hmm. It'll be kind of satisfying. But what about if Tyrion and Jaime re-encounter each other?
Right.
Or
that's gonna be stressful.
Davos and Melisandre.
Oof.
Tyrion and it comes encounters with...
Jon?
Or Tyrion and Bronn, like I mentioned earlier.
Well, we were
Tyrion and
Jon,
yeah.
We were talking earlier today about Tyrion and Sansa.
Yeah.
That's something I hadn't thought
about before. Yeah, Tyrion, Sansa. That's a big one. That's potentially just not necessarily them reuniting, but Tyrion finding out that Sansa's where she is.
Yeah.
What do you think that that's going to mean for them? And will that stately connection mean anything? Will either of them try to use it?
Especially if Tyrion finds out that Littlefinger is the one who has her.
Right.
That's going to set off a chain of reaction in his head, like,
oh my gosh.
Wait. He's got, then he'll maybe piece it all together. He just still doesn't know exactly what happened there.
So these reunions,
as far as Joffrey,
there's so much hinging on just which person meets with the other person first.
Because there's so much information that separate parties have that people don't. So we think about Bran and Mira coming through the wall. I mean, they don't know anything. And think about what it's going to be like when they show up at the wall and get all this information about Jon and Sansa and the Battle of the Bastards and everything that's been going on. And so everybody,
Jon's parents,
but everybody, I think that's a good point. Everybody has a lot of different information. The Hound has, you know, they've been existing outside of the same circle. And a lot of people have a lot of really crucial information that's going to change the way that people react to everything, things that can change everybody's worldview. And so it's going to be interesting. But Sean, what do you think about?
I want to follow up on that thought with this. You started off earlier talking about the pacing of how these are going to go and how we expect more action and more movement, which is obviously exciting. And I understand why everyone wants that. But I really like the dramatic moments. I like those still shots and a character reflecting on something that's happened or whatever. And I like normalness of certain moments in conversation, like when Tyrion is just trying to pass time and have them drink that, you know, absolutely. I like to see their real personalities come through in some of these moments, you know, and I fear we won't get much of those because I would really love for Bran to come back. If you just think about it, how much has happened? Like Joffrey wasn't even dead. Like the king has died, and by the way, not even the real king.
Two kings have died.
Many huge events, but those are kind of like
three.
Yeah, or like depending on who kind of is the king.
From the five kings.
Yeah, so but those are all kind of like, I don't know how to say this, big, you know, big picture things, big political things, whatever. But also in closer to home for him.
Yeah,
think about the family members. Sansa has gotten married twice. You know, like, these are all big events that would have deep meaning to him, that would have long extended emotional conversations and stories told.
Rickon's dead.
And we're just not, I guarantee you, we're just not going to see Bran learn any of this stuff.
You know,
a certain level, maybe we'll see some of it, but think how much Jon and Sansa would have had to tell each other and how little of it we saw. We assume it happens off screen, but I would really love to see those conversations unfold.
I also think about how many poignant moments were drawn out in the last season where we had a lot of time to settle into the scene and think about it. And I'm thinking specifically of Jon coming back. And I know that is a really big moment, but like that scene lasted forever. And there was no music and it was very quiet and shuffly of people coming in and out. And so
shuffly.
I hope to think that
we will get some.
I agree with you because I think that those moments are almost just as impactful, if not more, than any sort of battle that can happen. And so I hope too that there's weight and emphasis put on
those. I think reunions. We will get a lot of them because the episodes are extended length and they can't just be, I mean, battle scenes just can't be that long.
It's too expensive.
Yeah. I mean, when they do have a huge long battle scene, it, you know, there are a few that take up, you know, like a Battle of Bastards, the whole episode basically, but
Blackwater.
But that's rare. You know, and even if there's going to be a lot of battles, they can't just occupy these full extended episodes with just battles. So I think there'll still be plenty of drama.
And I think they know that people have been excited, not necessarily for these big battles, but for these big reunions, for these character beats, to have a conversation between Jon and Arya, to have a conversation between, I mean, Jon and Daenerys, just these, even the first meetings and things like that. I think we'll get a lot of dialogue and...
Cat attack. Jake and the cat of black and white.
This is going to fall on us.
He is not used to the mattress being used as a sound barrier.
He likes it though.
So a follow-up thought to all that is also what Bran has to bring. Like, not just the catching up he has to do, but on a certain level, like, it's hard for him to remove the emotion of Rickon dying and the curiosity of Sansa being married multiple times and things like this. But also, he's got some stories to tell.
Yeah.
A lot of the happenings, like the king died and someone's got dragons. Like maybe that's pretty impactful. But I can just see a lot of this big news, what people might think are big move, these alliances and these assassinations and everything else. Bran's like, Yeah. You don't understand. John, like, you might. John, a couple people understand, but let me tell you.
Let me tell you something about
I can time travel.
I saw our dad.
Oh my, as a child.
I met the children of the forest.
Yeah. They created the White Walkers that are real. Yeah. Also snarks,
and coming.
Giants, etc.
That's part of how I would answer the question here of the reunion is coming. I think Bran and X, and you know, it could easily be any or all of Sansa, John, and everyone else is dead.
Arya,
that's right. Sorry, Arya, yeah.
Okay, so before we kind of dive into specifically to what each episode is going to look like, because I think a lot of these reunions are going to happen pretty early on in these first three episodes, would love to get the History of Westeros hot takes on the last thoughts or predictions or feelings about not just even the first three episodes, but what you're hoping to see in this season.
What we're hoping to see or what we're expecting to see?
What you think? I know that's very two different questions, but I guess expectations is probably the best.
In terms of the episode titles, I always like to look at it in terms of them having multiple meanings, because they do that a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great thing for shows to do. And some of them are pretty straightforward. You would think like Dragonstone, obviously Daenerys arrives on Dragonstone. But it made me think of Obsidian and Dragonglass, and maybe there's some greater significance than just her arriving home. And
like a flashback of the Doom.
Yes, yeah, please. Doom of
and then like the second one, Stormborn. Obviously, you think of Daenerys, but as I mentioned earlier, I think of like a stormy sea battle. I think of Euron. I even think of Gendry because he's the son of a Stormlander.
Definitely think of Gendry for sure.
So like maybe that's the episode Gendry shows up as the second episode, and because we know that she gets an unexpected visitor. Could be Gendry, could be Euron, could be someone else, but
Melisandre.
But I'm thinking of people that have to do with storms because of that.
I like that idea, Gendry, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then for episode three, I tend to think that maybe that's when Jon arrives to Daenerys that early because it says she's holding court, you know?
Oh, yeah.
The Queen's justice, and I think we'll definitely get a whole lot of Cersei in that. There are two queens, and I had only thought about really concretely for the first three episodes that we had titles for.
Mm-hmm.
It also says Cersei returns a gift.
Which is not comforting.
No, it makes me think of what we said earlier about maybe Euron gave her a gift with the trouble with Dany.
He gives her a sand snake. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a whole other thing. Anyway, what do you think, Sean?
Mm-hmm. I've got a whole like list. I can literally read off a whole list.
Let's do it. Let's run down your thoughts.
Should I read that list off, Aziz? Or should Aziz steal all yours?
Go ahead.
All right. I think Bron will survive. Sansa will connive.
Ooh,
it rhymes.
Euron and Qyburn are going to get along.
Yes, they will.
Boobs. I think that they're going to have some alliances of people who, even though they're like together with the same goal, are still going to like disagree about how to do whatever they're trying to do. Does that make sense? And you'll see.
That's like the John
Tyrion Splinter from Dany, or John Splinter from Tormund, or something like that. You know,
Sansa. Yeah,
yeah. I think Benjen's gonna save the day. I think that battle in the north, he's gonna like ride in and break it up somehow. I think Clegane Bowl is gonna happen.
Get hype. 2K17.
And I think Tyrion's gonna ride a dragon.
Oof. That's like half of what you and I talked about. Tyrion, what do you think, Aziz?
I think. I think we talked a lot. The deaths are certainly important. The Tyrion riding dragon, I agree with that. I think the wall comes down the last episode of the season. I think that Jaime and Cersei are both around at the end, but that they're maybe Jaime is a hostage who's captured. He's not
by Cersei.
Not by Cersei. No, by Dany's forces, either by Tyrion or by Dany herself, and because she would want to keep him alive, I think he'd be too valuable to just kill. That would also allow Tyrion and Jaime to interact in a non-rushed fashion if he's imprisoned.
Yeah,
Jaime and Tyrion could interact well in that case.
It'd be a great scene. Tyrion could give Jaime the key, let him escape through some passage.
Yeah. Oh man,
I owe you one.
And
he could kill Cersei on the way out.
Oh, gosh.
Oh my.
And I think we learn a good deal more about the Walkers and their
oh yeah,
kind of their nature. I think that I think the explanation we've had for their existence is interesting, but far too incomplete at this point.
Yeah, well, especially with all the promotion that we've gotten surrounding them this whole lead up. Winter, I wouldn't be surprised.
You reminded me of another one I had. Bran and the Night King will have a psychic battle.
Okay.
Okay.
That'd be fun.
Like in the Matrix, later.
You heard it here first, folks. Exactly what's going to happen in season 7. Zach and I are going to go a little bit more in depth into the first 3 episodes and kind of read some of your comments. But we wanted to thank History of Westeros crew for coming on for a good portion of this episode.
Yes,
and for
hanging out
with us and for giving us your analysis and your theories and your expertise and bringing that all to the table. So thank you guys so much for
love you guys
hanging out with us.
Also, thank you for letting us use your bedroom. So please leave now.
This time we came on for a good portion. Next time, can we come on for an evil portion?
Yes, absolutely. Yes,
absolutely.
Thank you so much. Thank you. We'll get out of our bedroom.
I also predict that at the end of every episode, there'll be credits.
And before we go any further today, Hannah and I wanted to share with you our experience with a Game of Thrones Enhanced Editions.
iBooks has an exclusive version of George R. Martin's Game of Thrones called the Enhanced Editions that help you keep track of the storylines and the characters in a fun and interactive way.
I think that that's probably the simplest way you could describe how deep these books go.
Yes.
These books are available exclusively on iBooks. Go to apple.co/Game of Thrones to check them out. They're not available in all countries, but they're probably available where you live.
That's apple.co/Game of Thrones.
We're obsessed, and we know you will be too.
The first thing I thought of as we started scrolling through these and reading through the series on the Enhanced Edition is how much more I think I would have loved and appreciated A Feast for Crows the first time I read it if I had this. Because we talk all the time about how us going through the series slowly and together has made that experience much more special and has made
brought me, a lot of the details out of it.
Yeah, it's made me love those books more than I did the first time. And I think that with this guiding you with the maps, with the histories behind the different houses and new characters being introduced, you kind of get to understand how they fit into the story as you're being introduced to them. It is so incredibly helpful for a first-time reader and also for us who...
It's been helpful for us, big time.
Yeah, we're in it every day.
No, when I was going through some of the chapters from A Feast for Crows with Brienne, and she's meeting people like Nimble Dick, and we're supposed to understand and remember all of those details, especially as podcasters moving forward. But even as a new reader of the series, you're reading that, and it might be a little discouraging to not have a complete connection to that person for the rest of the story, especially if he comes back. Or maybe he was mentioned in a chapter before, and we don't have context of where he's supposed to be. Maybe we were supposed to pay attention to a book we read 2.5 years ago.
Right.
And it doesn't have the same impact. But if we open these chapters, first off, you get to see an illustration at the top of each chapter. So I'm looking at a Tyrion chapter and a Clash of Kings. And I wish you guys could see this with me, but I'm just going to describe it as vividly as I can. Tyrion is marked over the top of King's Landing. It says, "When we were last with Tyrion." And I click on it, and this big paragraph pops up with a selection of text that was curated and approved by George R. Martin. Mm-hmm. And these are all over the 5 books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's summaries to kind of keep you oriented, not just in the story, but also geographically, because that's also something that I think is really helpful, or that I think it's hard to keep track of, is just where you are in the world. Mm-hmm. And these maps are really beautiful. And so we get to see here, we're looking at Tyrion is...
I'm just zooming in and out of King's Landing.
He's just here in King's Landing. And it's a really cool way to bring the world to life. And it really is really, really beautifully done.
Well, for me, if I know we're reading a Davos chapter, it's helpful to know that he was stuck on a rock in the chapter before. Mm-hmm. And if he's in Dragonstone now... Mm-hmm. Then we understand maybe there was 15 chapters in between there. And if you're reading over weeks at a time, there's not always the same recall of what the characters are doing before.
Or if you're at the end of A Dance of Dragons, and it's been how long since you were in A Feast for Crows?
Right. It's been another book, and then we're getting an Arya chapter. It's a different name. Uh-huh. We're not sure if it's Arya exactly.
Yeah.
But with this, it's all the context is there. Mm-hmm. And go on, please.
Well, something else that I really, really liked about this is there's these little crowns that are next to different phrases, and these refer to millions of different things. There's literary analysis type stuff in here. So I clicked on, I can't remember where we were, but there was some reference to Lord of the Rings that I didn't know about. And so you click on the crown, it was like, this is a, George R. Martin is referencing this
thing that happened in Lord of the Rings that I'm not familiar with because I'm not as familiar with that series. And so you're not only getting information about A Song of Ice and Fire, but you're getting information about like the literary world
that it's living in.
That it's living in, which is really helpful because George R. Martin is like this incredible author who puts these Easter eggs in there that we miss all the time.
Well, I'm excited about using these moving forward for our read through episodes because there are so many fun facts hidden here, not just when you click on a bolded character's name and you get the context of where he is in the story, but like you said, these crowns, I saw one when we were first looking over these that it had a hint at Baelish's activity, and it was basically like Peter Baelish is being deceitful here. And it would be really good for a reread, not just a new reader, but if you've read these books before, go through with this version, with all of this brand new stuff that you cannot see anywhere and anywhere else, including these illustrations that are clickable. And we haven't even started talking about the fact that there's a sigil guide that has all of the houses.
And beautifully done.
You click on them and it has the art and it has their phrases and it's accompanied with family history. And it's not just in the appendix at the back. It's through the book as you're reading it. You can click on it as you meet new people.
Yep. So you can click on a character. It's in bold and you get their sigil in full, beautiful color and everything about their house, their history. So you can, again, orient yourself with who they are and where they come from.
And the fun facts are certainly more daunting and interesting as you get further in the series. I'm just looking at A Dance with Dragons versus A Game of Thrones. There's so much more innocent. There's a lot of Ned Stark related things. Right. In the
there's,
first book.
There's a lot of Peter Baelish just being sneaky here, like you were just saying.
Exactly. And then we've got Barristan Selmy and the Green Graces doing their drama in the Pyramids of Meereen, which is full of information that has been not dug into as much on the internet because it's the newest book, but also hasn't really been touched in the show at all. So if you're listening and you're considering reading these books, I'm telling you, these enhanced editions that's the place to start.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we both fell in love with this immediately looking at it, and we spend a lot of time in these books, and to be able to see them in a new and beautiful way, I think this is like the perfect setup if you're unsure, if you're ready to dive into the full series, or, you know,
Just helps, you know,
it
helps the whole process.
Yeah.
Starting out each chapter to get reacquainted with your environment and to have these sigils be constantly and the information be constantly in line as you're experiencing the book, it helps your memory. And I think it enriches the story. I think that we're getting kind of spoiled right now because we're so lucky it's happening with the Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really beautiful.
And just wanted to mention, I know we talked about it at the top of the show very briefly, but at the back of these books, there are interactive maps called Journeys, and you can click on a character's name and it will show you the journey that character took
through that book. It is wild.
Yeah,
it is really, really, really incredible. So you click on Jamie and we get this map of him going from River Run through Harrenhal all the way down to King's Landing. You can see where he's been throughout this story on this map, and that's really, really cool because we don't often get to look at it in such a visual way of how far he's traveled within the regions of Westeros.
We hope that you guys check out George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones Enhanced Editions and have as much fun with them as we are.
These books are available exclusively on iBooks. Go to apple.co/Game of Thrones to check them out.
That's apple.co/Game of Thrones. We're obsessed and we know you will be too. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was so much fun. I think that
the best.
I think that the biggest thing that has come out of Con of Thrones, and we've been talking about it so much, and I feel like this episode is kind of turning into like us gushing about all of the people that we get to collaborate with and work with. But I think that so much of what came out of Con of Thrones is the building of this community and the opportunity that we have to finally spend time together and to see each other as people and to collaborate. And I see so much of that after the convention. I see so many people that we met who we've been interacting with on Twitter for years, people who've been interacting with each other on message boards, on social media, through the podcast, got to spend time together in person for the first time. And there is such a rush and a high to that that you can't really put a price tag on. And so it's really fun to sit in the same room with everybody and to be able to talk about this series. And the season starts in just like a couple days. And so it could not be a better time to get excited. You know, I think that we would be excited if we went through a chapter with these guys, but the fact that we're talking about our final thoughts and predictions for season 7 is just really special.
So. I completely agree.
So
so we're sitting in the same room recording. We're really excited. I'm so excited about the new season, honestly. I know that we're in an awkward part of the episode to talk about it.
So now we can go back into a little bit more in depth. And I feel like we've been alluding to it this entire episode and conversation. But what's going to happen in these first three episodes of season... I almost said season one. These first three episodes of season seven. And so the first... So HBO, if you haven't seen already, released the descriptions. And episode one is called Dragonstone, if you haven't read it yet. And the description is, Jon organizes the defense of the North. Cersei tries to even the odds and Daenerys comes home. And we talked through the pictures that were released and the photos. And very obviously, we know that Dany is going to land on Dragonstone at some point in this first episode. But I'm kind of curious. And you know, so we talked about this a little bit earlier on in the episode, is whether or not Dany's going to be able to make it there quickly or quietly or kind of whatever that entails. But I'm curious as to your thoughts of what you think some of the major points that we're going to hit right out the gate. Episode, right out the gate.
I think that we're going to touch base with Arya. I think that we're going to probably get a refresher on, you know, the status of the King of the North. I just thought, not only from what we talked about, but just the foreshadowing with Littlefinger was so heavy, and it's continually so heavy in the trailers. It just feels like that's going to be, that's it. We're going to start there. And then if Jon and Daenerys do meet, there are going to be circumstances based off of what happens at Dragonstone for that to happen, or for them to have a reason to come together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I can't decide if it's going to be a clean entry or not in the Dragonstone. And I was going to say, I'm not sure if it matters, but it definitely matters as far as how good the episodes are.
Yeah, I think so.
Early on. Does that answer your question?
No, I think that definitely answers the question. And I definitely think that Jon and Dany are going to see each other very early on in these first three episodes. Absolutely.
Okay.
I think that in order for this season to progress the way that we think it will, I think that they have to very quickly meet and get together and whatever is going to happen between the two of them. I think that, so episode two is called Stormborn, and it says, Daenerys receives an unexpected visitor. Jon faces a revolt. Tyrion plans the conquest of Westeros. And
that is such a description.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Tyrion low-key plans the conquest of Westeros, whatever.
Okay.
But I think that what I think is going to happen is that Jon is going to be at Winterfell, and the whole Sansa thing is going to be going on, and Littlefinger, and there's going to be lots of talk, and he hears word some way, somehow, of what's happening with Dany, and then decides to either show up in episode two or leaves in episode two, leaves whatever's happening in Winterfell, and that by episode two or three, the two of them are in the same place.
She receives an unexpected visitor in this episode, and then Jon faces a revolt, so I don't think it's each other.
I don't think that that's each other, no, but I do think that that revolt may be because a catalyst of either a catalyst for him to leave or maybe a reaction.
Oh, I see.
So something I was thinking about, and I'm not sure if this was somebody's comment or not. So something I was thinking about, and we got this comment from Bran Flakes, who I'm going to paraphrase a little bit, but they say, I think based on the episode descriptions and interviews, Jon is going to be working on securing his position. Sansa's going to be poking holes in it, and then Bran's going to turn up at Winterfell and everyone's going to go crazy because he's the heir to the North, and what are they going to do now? And so something that I'm super interested in, and I don't know if that plays into this Jon faces a revolt thing, but Bran's the guy, I mean, Bran has the claim to Winterfell, and Jon's been spending all this time.
We didn't mention that with them at all.
Jon's going to be spending all this time, or has spent this time, rallying the troops and getting everybody hyped up, King of the North. And then here we have Bran. He's going to roll in, literally, roll in. And that's going to throw a wrench into things on top of what's already going on with Sansa and Littlefinger.
Oh, man, that is a perfect storm. So, yeah, it makes more sense because I don't see Jon making a decision tactically or militarily that says, for example, let's ignore the White Walkers and then everyone wants to revolt against him, or let's focus on the White Walkers and everyone wants to revolt against
them.
Right. None of those makes sense.
We've already had Jon. People have already revolted against him and he died.
I know, but he has a new crew now.
It would make more sense if it's a little bit more of this like familial mess than an Ollie situation.
Yeah, but how much are they going to believe what he has to say about what he's seen north of the wall?
Bran?
So, well, that's true, but just what if there's a stretch of time, it'd be interesting to see John say that, because the last that we saw John, he was being turned into a king or fighting in a battle. He didn't really have enough time to tell all of the different houses of the North about the White Walkers. Mm-hmm. So we haven't even seen if they're going to believe him or the rest of the wildlings.
Right.
So right. That's just an extra layer on top of it. So if Bran does come and he can confirm, that's going to be really cool when we get them confirming all the same.
It's going to be. And so we see that picture of Lyanna Mormont standing up. And I feel like
she's like standing up.
I think it's part of the conversation. You know, I think that there's going to be a coming together and they're going to continue to have these conversations and that maybe be part of it. I mean, that was from episode one. So like, I don't really know, like who knows, but.
It's what was she already have to be standing up and having a speech about in episode
one? King of the North.
Just reminding everyone.
What the claim is, I don't know. But a piece that I'm really interested in is how the Stark children are all going to react to each other and like what that looks like. And a lot of them were last together when they were young. And so I don't really want to play onto these stereotypes of like what Sansa and Arya's relationship was like a million years ago, because they're both different people. And so I don't necessarily want to like play into some of those. I hope it doesn't go there. I don't think it'll go there. And I hope it doesn't go there. The show is in the series, I think, and I hope is smarter than that, but there's going to be,
they've just gone through so much.
They've been gone through so much. There's going to be some sort of tension.
But
there.
There
has to be some sort of tension.
The
there.
Same thing is happening with Sansa and Jon. You think about what they've each gone through. Jon has seen an undead ice zombie raise his arms, mm-hmm. not to mention all the other stuff. Not to mention that he was brought back to life himself and bring back a bunch of people back from the dead. You know what I mean? And Sansa's gone through every horror in King's Landing and arguably being in even a more dangerous position. Probably her and Jon, you know, mm-hmm. up there among the most tenuous experiences. So why are they having an internal squabble? And why would Arya and Sansa, after going through all that they've gone through, Arya can pull faces off and change them. What does she have to be bad about anymore?
Yeah.
Annoyed at Sansa because she likes dresses?
I don't think that about like squabbles.
Yeah.
I just think that like there's just going to be some sort of refamiliarization between the siblings, as we've seen with Jon and Sansa. And again, I don't necessarily agree with the way things are going with that, but I just think it's going to be an interesting dynamic. And I don't know, Arya and Jon may miss each other.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that that's a really real possibility.
Well, I thought you mean like miss each other. Like, I miss you.
No,
that's
like, what I was thinking. I think they already do miss each other, but I think they might not see, they might not see each other.
That would not be cool.
Jon may leave when Arya is already on her way. You know, I mean, so we can't have everybody in Winterfell at the same time.
This is why we haven't talked about season 7 that much, because we get to talking about season 7 together and we come to these realizations that some are great, some are kind of depressing.
Yeah. Well, and all these questions, I mean, these are all things that can very theoretically happen in episodes 1 and 2, which I think is crazy and very exciting. And so we haven't even touched on episode 3 yet, which is called The Queen's Justice.
Which is an awesome name for an episode.
The Queen's Justice. I mean, you think about all the queens that are in play here mm-hmm. too. Unbelievable. So the tagline or the description says, Daenerys holds court. Cersei returns a gift. Jaime learns from his mistakes. I think that a lot of what we've been waiting for and hoping for, because we see this in the books, is Jaime and Cersei's relationship. And what I'm thinking and hoping...
Say what you want to say. You want to see the relationship fall apart.
I do. I mean, that's what we've all been waiting for, right?
Yeah.
And so when we talk about Jaime learns from his mistakes, like, come on. And so I think that there's an interesting dynamic.
Everyone wants to see their boy move on from that toxic relationship he's been in.
There's an interesting dynamic here with Euron possibly showing up likely showing up into the picture early on.
Oh, gosh.
And Euron and Cersei together. What does that mean? What are the implications for that? We'll talk about that. But Jaime, it's been a break between Cersei and Jaime has been coming for so long. And we can laugh about it and whatever. But like the reality is that if we're going to move in the direction that the books are moving in, that's something that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so I think that as Cersei continues to, it's going to be interesting to see how she rules and what her next steps are going to be as the Queen of Westeros. But Jaime's going to obviously be caught up in that. And so I think that Jaime learning from his mistakes, while he himself is not a queen in the Queen's Justice, I think that he is very much at play in what Cersei herself is doing.
That makes a lot of sense. And then Daenerys, you think, she's doing her own thing with the King of the North.
Yeah. I think that she's
not.
Or not. But either way, she's
in Westeros holding court as somebody who believes that they are the true and rightful heir, which is really exciting. We got a comment from Is It July 16th Yet? on Watchers on the Wall. Same. Who said, the Queen's Justice, I'm actually really excited to see Dany hold court and finally see how the common Westerosi people react to her. As this episode is called The Queen's Justice, I think we'll really see the dynamics between Dany and Cersei and how each handle politics and power. And then they go on to say, I also feel Cersei's return as a gift is quite ominous and probably not a good thing. I'm wondering if she sends anything to Tyrion or Dany as a threat, but I really can't help but think of what Ilaria sent her, Marcella's necklace, in a viper. So I'm wondering if this has ties to the Dorne storyline. Mm-hmm. So the gift returning has something to do with what happened to Marcella. And so this is a question. So I think that what happened with Marcella is something that is going to have to be repaid in some way mm-hmm. in this season. And there's talk that Cersei's gift here is getting back at Dorne, if, you know, at one or all of the Sand Snakes.
Go for it.
And there's also, interestingly enough, speculation that not revenge, it's not revenge, re-gifting. But I mean, the regifting or whatever for what happened could also come from like Tyrion and Dany, or this is a universally bad move that happened. And so
a Lannister or someone could basically pay mm-hmm. them back.
Yeah. So I think it's more likely that it's probably, well, obviously it's a Cersei returns a gift, that's what that could refer to.
Yeah. I didn't think about that.
But
that gift makes a lot of sense. That's on the nose. That's going to be really cool.
It's going to be, I mean, a gift from Cersei is never going to be.
No.
This is not puppies.
She sent socks for Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see. But I definitely think that by episode 3, Doran's going to be in play. Euron's going to be in play.
Mm-hmm.
Dany's going to be holding court. We're going to be already plotting. Or Tyrion's probably going to be well on his way to whatever plot was happened in the episode before.
Man.
Well,
instead of owns for today's episode, I think we should probably look at season 7. What do you think is going to happen?
As a whole.
Yeah, what's season 7? Because I've heard it said that the feeling is, because this was originally supposed to only be a seven season series, according to the showrunners, 7 and 8 are kind of two halves of the same season.
Right.
So
right.
Essentially, we're looking at the season finale. Yeah. Like this could potentially be, you know, how Mad Men was split in half.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is basically that, except we have, you know, a larger amount of episodes than what the season would have originally looked like. So we have 3 extra instead of, you know,
right,
a few less. So,
what do I think is going to happen?
Yeah, and the season finale, basically. Yeah, what do you think is going to happen? I don't want to answer this question.
I don't know. Can I talk about the pieces that I'm most excited
sure,
to hear
yeah,
about?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I just feel like what's going to happen is I read too much fan fiction. This all feels like we talked about earlier. All these reunions and things like this almost feel fan fiction-y because I think that we're in this territory that
it's the end,
and that's really scary. But I do think Aziz touched on this earlier, the wall. I think that the wall coming down is very much something that's going to happen in this season, near the end, at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Cersei and Jaime are going to like Valonqar get at it in this mm-hmm. season. I think that that's going to be set up to be like season 8. A piece I'm really interested in Jaime's storyline. We haven't really touched on from the trailer. We get this Jaime Field of Fire 2.0, very much in battle. And I'm really interested to see kind of how his storyline plays out. If he's going to see Tyrion again, what's going to happen between Cersei. And just like, I'm just interested and intrigued in his character. And so I'm looking forward to that. But I don't know. I think that, you know, a lot of this is about Dany. And I think that there's some back and forth about, there's a lot of comments on Watchers on this post back and forth of like, why is this so Dany centric and all that kind of thing. But I mean, she's invading the Seven Kingdoms.
She is.
And I think that that's going to be the driving force behind a lot of what happens in this season. So Dany invading the Seven Kingdoms, whatever Tyrion dragons, ice dragons, Euron Greyjoy.
Just in general.
You know, I don't know. I wish I had a more eloquent way to like talk about what I think is going to happen this season, but
there's no way to know.
There's no way to know.
Last year before season 7, we had an episode called Get Hype, and we opened it up the episode. We were talking about how, by the way, this is officially, we're completely going out of book territory.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to happen this season can only be informed by the book our theories and speculation and using hints based off of what they do as a pattern from the series. And I feel like now we almost don't even have a pattern to base it off of.
We don't.
Because everybody is coming together, and coming together has only been a very recent thing that's been like a treat. Mm-hmm. But it feels like almost it's going to be part of the mechanics mm-hmm. of this next season, this first half of the final season, depending on how everyone wants to refer to it. I'm not sure. So it's like, you know, it's down to the wire, and down to the wire starts on Sunday night.
Yeah.
And so if we thought that season six had things that we didn't know about, I'm afraid that season seven, not that this is definitive, it's just my opinion, but I think that it's likely that Game of Thrones is going so far away from the books, so far away from the books, just in general.
Which I think is fine.
Which is fine. And so this one, we really don't know yeah. what's going to happen. And there are particulars online that you guys can look up, but as we've gotten closer to the release date of the new season, we've gotten more reports on the fact that HBO and Big Head Little Head were basically doing fake filming when they thought the paparazzi was around to throw mm-hmm. people off about mm-hmm. certain plot points. So if you're comfortable and you've read all of the leaks and you think that there's no surprises in store for you, there
I don't think
probably
that, yeah.
definitely are I surprises in be. Store for you. Yeah.
Can we talk about spoilers really fast? Go. Is that like,
yeah.
But so we're talking about spoilers and leaks and all that kind of thing. And I've been concerned, and I think that people who are participating are concerned about so much is already out there. And so what are people going to talk about? And I think that we've tried very hard in this episode to not address definitively any sort of leaks. And so hoping to kind of keep that same tone yes. throughout the whole season, because there is a lot out there and some of us have read some of it. Some of us have read nothing. You know, I think that there's, people can make their own choices about what they want to do with leaks and things like that, but that we are going to not definitively address any sort of filming leak or thing like that that hasn't come out
mm-hmm.
in the episode.
And you can listen to Joanna, Neil, and Dave's podcast, The Storm of Spoilers, for that, because they've been diving into the leaks like for months.
Yeah. So if that's your wheelhouse and you've got resources for it, but right. That being said,
it would be really fun if we did just go read the spoilers right now and talk about it. That would be a whole different Game of Thrones. Anyway, so on that note, we're going to read some spoilers. They're not real. I had to say that. This is from Erica on Watchers on the Wall. They commented with the link that said, remember, this site still exists and it's a Game of Thrones spoiler generator.
Heck yeah.
And so I'm going to read some of this.
Spoilers that were generated.
You haven't read this, right?
I haven't read it.
So this is what actually happens. Just picture it in your minds. Feast your eyes and prepare to be amazed at Muskills, Erica writes. Davos's wife will accidentally dance with a nice old woman. Robert Strong will arrive in White Harbor to challenge Tormund on behalf of a cache of wildfire. Just, you know, mm-hmm. on behalf of the wildfire. Mm-hmm. After he saw all the damage that the wildfire did, Robert Strong extra respects it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sam's sister will end up marrying a nice old woman to really? Cement control over Gold Town. Dormammu will slice off Cersei's face. That is a 340% likelihood. This. After drinking with Ramsay's dogs, Beric Dondarrion will convert to becoming a devout follower of some depressed gods.
Okay.
Or Sansa, or Cersei is actually a reincarnation of the first Lord Commander.
Okay.
That makes sense. Ilaria Sam will travel to Braavos to create the Winds of Winter, hoping it will aid them in the war against the foreign force.
The foreign force.
Bran will warg into a rambunctious dwarf to murder Satan. Which isn't far off from my theory. Melisandre and 20 big men get married against their better judgment. Danny's horse is still alive and is actually the Lord of Light. Or Jaime and Azor Ahai will have a duel to compete for the love of the stallion who mounts the world. In a very Shyamalan-like Shyamalan. Like, in a very science director slash writer like turn of events, Melisandre will be elected to lead the Alliance's army against the forces of Littlefinger.
Okay.
Which would be crazy. Jon Snow is actually a reincarnation of Ramsay Bolton.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
And the best one of all.
Yeah, the best theory of all, which I'm sure was debated at length at Con of Thrones this year. Missandei is actually Varys.
So there you have it. All the spoilers and leaks that have been out on the internet. We just read them all.
Boom.
Missandei is actually Varys.
This has been such a fun episode.
This has been a really fun episode. I almost don't want it to end.
I know.
But we hope that you guys have had as much fun as we have hanging out with History of Westeros and kind of going through what we know about season 7. And we cannot be more excited to dive into the season together and to
read all of your owns and to really get into the meat of what's going to happen over the next 7 weeks.
Yeah, we'll be doing episodes like usual directly after the airing. So our first take after the airing of each new episode. And we'll be bringing in friends from the Game of Thrones community. And we'll be following up that episode with another episode in the week where we bring in your owns and thoughts and theories and suspicions. And
we're going to be asking questions and making sure that you guys are as included in this and we are on this journey together. So we're could not be more excited.
Yeah. So on that note, let us know what you think about the Missandei is actually Varys theory.
Start spreading the word. Tell your friends. Make the hashtags.
And I think it'd be remiss if we didn't give Clegane Bowl get hype hashtag TK17 yeah. another plug.
So we made a list of things that we wanted to talk about in this episode before we sat down to record, and we put things on there like season plans and the George R. R. Martin news and the three questions and plot points we're excited about, and then we just have one line. It just says Clegane Bowl.
Clegane Bowl was adapted into a T-shirt at Con of Thrones.
Clegane Bowl was a T-shirt at Con of Thrones, and Clegane Bowl was also confirmed in the trailer.
Was it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, as far as Hannah's concerned, his hashtag. I honestly, yes. Honestly, 2K17. Honestly,
I know.
We should tell everyone, by the way, really quick before we go. Sean, who was just up here,
yeah,
he was spoiled slightly at Con of Thrones.
My fault.
As part of the opening and closing ceremonies, we wrote some really fun stuff, and Hannah played a character, Lady Stoneheart, which you were amazing.
It was horrifying.
She had to get her makeup off really quick before we did the
interview. The most important moment of my life. And I was like covered in dead person's makeup. But so we'd had this like whole conversation the night before about how Sean didn't know who Lady Stoneheart was. He didn't want to be spoiled. And yeah. I just wasn't even thinking about the fact that I was going to be on the main stage as Lady Stoneheart a mere 12 hours later. But his theory, before he found out who Lady Stoneheart was that Lady Stoneheart was going to be the referee for Clegane Bowl.
Which,
can you imagine?
Maybe we need to put in sound effects or something, or maybe you're all screaming at home. This is coming from someone who didn't know, he didn't have any context really on Clegane Bowl or Lady Stoneheart. And we were talking about those two things at once. And he was like, oh, so Lady Stoneheart could be the referee for the Clegane Bowl. And then first off, two things happened to me. I've never considered the possibility of us having a referee
for the Clegane Bowl.
That would be the best. Also, what better person could be the referee for the Clegane Bowl?
I mean, my only thing is that like Lady Stoneheart isn't coming back, and so I don't want to tie those two things together because Clegane Bowl is very real. But
oh my gosh!
You know, on that note, everybody, we are in it. It's the next time you hear from us, we'll have already seen the first episode of season 7. Just get your wild theories and hashtags and comments and owns ready because Sunday. It's time.
Sunday.
Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
And before we go, we'd like to remind you about our new and favorite way to experience Game of Thrones.
iBooks has an exclusive version of George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones called the Enhanced Editions that help you keep track of the storylines and the characters in a fun and interactive way.
You'll never need to consult the Stark family tree again.
These books are available exclusively on iBooks. So go to apple.co/Game of Thrones to check them out.
They're not available in all countries, but they're probably available where you live.
That's apple.co/Game of Thrones.
We're obsessed, and we know you will be too.